The Initial Reaction Podcast is back for its 100th episode. I'm so excited. We've hit a milestone. JP Kadoran, you of Time Warner Cable Sports Channel, should be very proud.
I'm clapping, and you've included me for almost all of them.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes
when
you're not really...
go off and do your own thing, man.
Well, sometimes I feel like I want to do my own thing. I need to spread my wings, and that's exactly what's happening.
Fair enough. Well, how are you, buddy?
I'm pretty decent. I wanted to chat a couple things with you today, things that are right in your wheelhouse. I wanted to talk about TV, specifically because Troy Aikman and Joe Buck, everybody's favorite announcers, will be calling the game this weekend between the Green Bay Packers and the Dallas Cowboys. And so I wanted to talk about that. I wrote a column about that. Also, on a completely different topic, I want to talk about wrestling a little bit, high school wrestling, not the WWE variety. Spoke with Ed Kurth of Pewaukee High School, who is a longtime coach, very successful coach in the Milwaukee area, big-time advocate for the sport of wrestling, and talked to him about sort of dwindling participation in some parts of the state, or some parts of the area in particular, among Division I, Division II programs, and if that's a crisis, if it's just sort of a natural life cycle, what are some of the things that cause wrestling participation to dwindle, things of that nature. So I really enjoyed having a conversation with Ed about that. That's going to be coming up later in the podcast.
You are a very hard worker. Nobody can ever deny that.
Sorry, what? I was checking Facebook. What were you saying?
Oh, you got jokes today.
I have lots of jokes.
Good.
Have I not had jokes before?
I'm glad that you want to talk about Joe Buck and Troy Aikman and media coverage, because after all, media starts with me. let's talk about some media. Do you have a problem with them?
Do I have a problem with media or with Joe Buck?
No, with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, most people in the state do for some reason.
Yeah, I absolutely do not. I have no problem with them. I'll say this. I don't enjoy Joe Buck that much. I don't, you know, I just don't care for his style necessarily, but I think he's a professional. I have no problem with him calling games. In fact, I think when he talks, it kind of creates an association of, this is a big game, because he does World Series, he does Super Bowls, he does these huge events. You know, if the Packers and Cowboys are playing on a Sunday afternoon and you hear that voice, I think it makes a pretty grandiose association, don't you?
I do. I think I'm upset because we even agree in the way that we disagree on it. I have no problems with him at all. I don't like, just like you said, I don't really like the way that he does it. Like, I don't really like the yelling, you know, he'll yell, Rodgers, Cobb, touchdown. Like, I just don't enjoy that style of call. But I have nothing against him. I would love to meet him and talk to him. I'm sure, you know, I would enjoy him immensely. But I don't know. I think that the hatred for him is just so out of proportion.
I would say we're also on a little bit of a precipice where there are more people saying you should not feel this way, not feel that there should be a petition banning Joe Buck and Troy Aikman from calling Packers games, as there is. There's almost more people shouting down the people who feel that way in the first place. So I don't want to cross over and become the cliche in disputing the sentiment that those guys are so bad, that they're so anti-Packers and need to be silenced forever.
The big argument against Joe Buck is that he hates your team. And I think if I remember reading correctly, like, I think he's really proud of that, because if that's the case, if everybody thinks that, it means that he's being extremely objective and he's not playing up fan bases, if I remember reading that correctly.
He's given a lot of interviews on the topic, and I've listened to him talk on podcasts and such. I've sensed that he's not necessarily proud of it, because it's not like he doesn't want people to like him and appreciate the job he does. I think anybody in our business has a little bit of that in them, a little bit of, you know, wanting to be appreciated and liked and in some cases even adored, like yourself, JP Kadoran. But I do think, He really, there's just nothing he can do about it. And I think he's surrendered to that. And he's not playing into it, but not really paying attention to it. If he is truly objective down the middle, he's going to have moments of excitement for both sides. And it seems like that's going to draw the ire of both fan bases. So it's this weird situation where the better he is at his job, literally the more hatred he's going to get. It's a very bizarre situation. And my column, which you can find at the Preps Alcove at lakecountrynow.com, details all the reasons why people might feel that way. Why why psychologically we have just this seemingly enhanced distaste for national announcers, particularly guys that are going to be calling these big games that, you know, we don't get our hometown biased announcers in the National Football League because they're all nationally televised games or regionally televised games. So I think it's just there's some really kind of, I think, pretty obvious explanations about why this is happening.
Well, now, how does that extend to Troy Aikman, somebody who is so established with one team that, you know, Joe Buck, it doesn't have a team. He didn't play in the NFL, but obviously Troy Aikman kind of did for a little while, you know, for a couple seasons, at least I can remember him in the NFL. You know, so I think that's probably going to have I think people are going to be pretty upset watching that on Sunday too, given that it is against the Cowboys, wouldn't you think?
I definitely agree. And I'm sure that in Dallas, most people have a high opinion of Troy Aikman, but even there, and he's been out of the game now for quite a while. I mean, they've been the top team, I want to say, since 2002, together, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman as an announcing team. But I have to imagine even there will be people who say, you know what, he goes out of his way to avoid looking biased, so he's more critical of the Cowboys than he would be otherwise. I'm sure that sentiment exists,
yep.
Don't you think?
Yep. So people just kind of hear what they want to hear, right?
It's true. And I even in the literal sense, people hear what they want to hear. And I brought this example up in my article. So when Rodgers throws the Hail Mary to Randall Cobb right before half, I had no idea what Joe Buck said because I was screaming. I was going nuts. If I'd been in a bar, it would have been, you know, deafening. So I don't hear him when he calls something with excitement. And you go back and listen to it, he's clearly, you know, showing excitement for the Packers. But I do hear it when the Giants score a touchdown because I'm sitting there on my couch pouting and being upset and listening to every word he says. So even in a fundamentally like literal way, we only hear what leads us to think they're being negative.
That's pretty great. Yeah, I've never had that sort of concern about whether or not commentators have it for or against my team. Again, I've found that some people's styles and just purely like some people's voices just upset me just
definitely.
The way that they talk. But yeah, I've never harbored that hate for Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. I've never felt that way.
Now you're in a different situation where you're more of you're not doing as much play-by-play. You're kind of doing a lot of news magazine stuff. So I don't imagine that there are people out there in the Milwaukee area that really just can't stand you the way they can't stand some of these national broadcasters.
Yeah, only you, I think.
Only me.
Is the one who can't stand me.
Yep, you merit an instant change of the channel. So what I want to know, though, is I think one of the things maybe tangentially related to this is there aren't very many characters anymore in national broadcasting. Guys like Bob Uecker, guys like Ron Santo before he passed away, I mean, even Harry Carey, Harry Callis, Howard Cosell, you know, it used to be that you could say kind of whatever you wanted. I mean, when Bob Uecker makes bad play-by-play mistakes, which kind of happens fairly regularly, nobody's going to really be that upset about it because that's just Bob, you know? He's beloved and he certainly has his track record, but also because that's just his style. He's a storyteller more so than a play-by-play guy. But now I feel like the current crop of announcers, the ones that are doing national games, but even the regional ones, they're very buttoned up. They're very straight, play to the camp. You know, you don't really have a personality. You just let the action be the guide, and then maybe the color commentator is the one who steps in and has that personality. I mean, are you taught going through school to be just as neutral as humanly possible, to not let that sort of bleed into your TV persona?
No, I think that all goes to who raises you and where you go, you know, once you start learning. Like, you're definitely not taught that. I mean, at least I wasn't, and I can't think of anybody else who else was. But, you know, I think the way that I've adapted what I do in terms of storytelling and the few times that I have done any sort of play-by-play or color, that's all shaped by the job environment that I'm in. I mean, Dennis Krause, has been around this for a long time, and he is – as you know, kind of as by the book as they come, and that's what he's found to be successful. That he wants to present viewers with the, you know, with his kind of facts and maybe a slight opinion, and then let them be the ones to go crazy either way. And so I think that's part of it. And then also, like, we're not, you know, because of what our channel is, we're not a hard hitting news organization. We're here to give people their local teams, which usually gets, you know, shrouded in a very positive light. So I don't know. I mean, I've never been around any sort of that hard-hitting, hot-take opinions because that's just not kind of who I've been around, you know?
Right. And we're recording this on Wednesday, the day Donald Trump gave yet another speech that will perhaps live in infamy, and I feel like that all ties into it as well. We're in an echo chamber place in our world right now where we have very, very polarized viewpoints. You surround yourself with Twitter and Facebook and opinions that are like-minded, even maybe in the people you hang out with, but it's becoming increasingly difficult to see the other side, see the other opinion, come to compromise, that sort of thing. So when that's how you live, you go and watch your sports and somebody might be, you know, pointing out how great your team is, but then suggest, oh, they're really doing a great job on the other side too. And all you hear is that. You don't, I think we've become accustomed and we're training ourselves to take that as an affront, you know, rather than he's trying to be sort of diplomatic. He's disagreeing with me, you know? So I do think that also plays into it, just the worldview that we have right now.
Yeah. And I think this is slightly different. But you were talking about like the personalities and how everybody's different. And like, there are still people around that people like that around, like, you know, my favorite in the world is Al Michaels, and that goes back to, you know, the Miracle on Ice because that involves hockey, so that has a soft spot in my heart. But then I just love his voice and love his style of calling things. And then, you know, there are still other like colorful legends around, like, you know, Vern Lundquist just hung it up and people loved him. And, you know, Dick Vitale is another like iconic person, and while those people are all going to start to leave, like Uecker's going to leave eventually, I don't know. I mean, I think there are certain people that also have come up. Like I was trying to think of maybe like Mike Tirico definitely isn't as polarizing, but still he's becoming like kind of that big event. Bob Costas for sure is a big event type guy. Joe Buck is also that big event guy. So there are, you know, you kind of want to say like, man, all of the big time people are all leaving. It's like, well, not really, because they are coming up too. Like Joe Buck is obviously young, and Bob Costas I think is like 35. He's been 35 for the last 40 years.
We need to accept that man is a vampire and will live forever. He does not
minus
age.
Minus the pink eye and Sochi. He is just a like a rubber mask of perfection.
So many problems when we start talking about Russia. That's what it comes down to.
Very topical of you. Well done.
Yes, I'm a political savant, as it turns out.
Yes.
So, you should check out my column at the Preps Alcove. I quote Joe Buck from a couple articles that have been written about him and sort of what he has to say about it, which I think is very telling and very timely, given the fact that we just saw them last week and we're going to see them again this weekend.
Yeah, well, I will be in Jerry World on Sunday,
and
I will make sure you tell Troy Aikman that he is a biased homer.
You should do that, yes. I'm sure he won't be hearing it from anyone else.
No.
Another media-related thing to emerge from the NFL playoffs this weekend, when you watched, if anyone watched, the Houston Texans-Oakland Raiders game, considered by many to be the first playoff game to not have playoff implications, you saw a lot of J.J. Watt. He was on the sideline. They showed him at every instance, and I think we have already crossed this plateau with our local friend J.J. Watt, where he is getting a little vilified in the media by virtue of being someone who's very visible and very open about the things that he does on the side, like charity work, things like that. Russell Wilson is absolutely in this exact same camp, another NFL playoff person right now. And I just wonder, like, what do you think of that? Is there anything J.J. Watt can do to avoid the backlash that has probably already started bubbling up and is inevitably going to come because this guy keeps getting shown on the sideline? He hasn't even played all year, and you've got Jadeveon Clowney doing amazing things. I mean, I feel like we're in that danger zone. As somebody who really likes J.J. Watt, I definitely don't want that to happen. I don't want it to be where he becomes one of the more vilified guys in the NFL, as I kind of think Russell Wilson got to be, maybe not
this year,
but more in the past couple of years.
True story, I believe Russell Wilson was on Rich Eisen's show today on the radio, and I literally could not listen to it.
Really?
I couldn't do it. But that's more because of his exact personality, more so than the exposure I've had to him over the last 5 years. Like, I caught the tail end of one question about the Super Bowl, and then I heard Rich ask him, but, like, for you, personally, as a quarterback of a team, as a human being, what would it mean to you to win another Super Bowl? And Russell Wilson paused and then went, you know, for our team, that would be just such a magical moment. I'm like, you have to be kidding me. Like, he's such a robot that I just can't stand it anymore. So I think that the, for me, my level of uncomfort with Russell Wilson is totally different than any sort of level with J.J. Watt, because I still think, you know, J.J. Watt, just personality-wise, is much more tolerable. And I think that it was really interesting, all the backlash that he took. You were talking about before the backlash where, you know, he posted, what was it, like Houston was flooding, like historic floods, and he posted like a Snapchat at 3 a.m. at the gym or something like that, and people got upset about that.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's just like, man, there is nothing you can do. That if people, you know what, JR, haters are going to hate, and that's there's nothing you can do about it, you know?
This is true. I do think that we use the word tone deaf a lot, the expression tone deaf, and in many cases, I think fairly, there does seem to be, every now and then, you know, when there are floods and an athlete at 3 a.m., it does feel like, hey, look at me, I'm doing all this work at 3 a.m. while, you know, while this rain is falling down around me. I mean, I probably wasn't even in Houston. I don't even know the example you're talking about. So it may not, maybe it wasn't even aware. I don't know. But it's sort of, it's crazy to think the fine line you have to walk. Now, part of Russell Wilson's problem is that he's been very open about his faith, and that's a hot button thing. You say one thing about your faith and people think immediately that you're over the top about your faith. It's like politics. The second you say one thing, people assume that is something you care deeply, deeply passionately about, and it's all you care about, even though it may just be a very small part of the puzzle. So there's that aspect to it. Just, it feels like both with Russell and JJ, they seem to be really good people, and they either through their own means or through just the way that they've been handled or however, it seems like that's put in front of us a lot. Like, oh, okay, JJ donated jerseys or did this really cool thing where he showed up at prom or for a fan. I mean, he does so many cool things, and it's amazing that there's actually a backlash from that, that at some point people get sick of it.
All.
Well, it doesn't bother me at all either.
I follow him on Twitter. I follow his foundation. I love seeing everything he does.
Yeah, like, I totally agree.
His personality, his actions don't bother me. Russell Wilson's actions and words bother me.
But what has Russell Wilson done action-wise that bothers you? I mean, he does a lot of that charity stuff, too. And nanobubbles thing.
Yeah.
But it's primarily that he's unwilling to really say anything interesting, I think, is what is sort of the problem with him.
Yep, yeah. So actions is definitely the wrong word there. But yes, his words, they bother me. Absolutely. I mean, it frustrates me. I'm sure part of it comes from being a member of the media, and it's my job to get people to say interesting things, and anybody who's really good at making that tough, probably subconsciously I don't like. But also it's just boring. I don't enjoy listening to a robot, and that's what I think he is.
Yes, and I do not feel that way about J.J. Watt. I think he's a fairly interesting quote most of the time. I guess I'm just pointing out, in addition to all the other things that come with fame, there seems to be this need to find a middle ground where you're not – like, I don't think there's anything you can do when you become an elite athlete with high exposure to not become irritating to your fan base. Not to your fan base, but to the national base, I should say. I just think that's a bummer. Like, you could be this really good guy, and the second you do, you know, three or four good things in a row, people blame you for being too out there and, you know, bragging about yourself. May not even be you who's saying these things. So I don't know. I just that just caught me as interesting that the J.J. Watt exposure that he got over the weekend has played into sort of this growing unease with sort of celebrity around the country.
Yeah, but also there are millions of athletes in the past who have found ways to do it where they, you know, they walk that line of being accessible yet still in a good spot PR-wise. So it doesn't seem that tough, and for me, J.J. Watt is still perfectly in that place, and Russell Wilson isn't.
I feel like you just don't like Russell Wilson because he's the rival Seattle Seahawks, even though I know you're not like a diehard Packers fan by any means.
Yeah.
But
no, there's just a lot of things about him that, I don't know.
I don't get it. Like, I like him fine.
I don't dislike him.
Right.
There's just a lot of things that I could just do without, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's fine. we gotta unfortunately get out of here a little earlier than normal. But what anything else from the sports world that you found remarkable the last week or so? The Bucks are confusing me. I went to a game Sunday and saw them be terrible, and then I saw them beat the Spurs last night on my TV. I don't quite understand how that happened.
Fantastic. Somebody was saying that beating the Spurs on the road is their biggest win of the year, and I think back to that game against the Knicks.
I agree with you completely.
I mean, just for everything that did on the pro, for the profile of the team and for Giannis, I mean, that was huge. This is a good, maybe a good validation win, because, right? Because like this win, if this was college football, this would be a huge boost in the rankings because of where you won and how you won and who you beat. As it is, it's just the NBA, so it is strictly based on wins and losses. But yeah, I think it was a big win, and it reaffirms. It kind of like it tells me not to go away, not to get rid of the Bucks just yet.
It's like golf, right? Though, because the Knicks game was the best shot we hit on our round of 18, and then we proceeded to muck that up by hitting the next shot, you know, sideways into the trees.
So true.
We bogeyed the hole. And then we came back on the next hole and had a really good drive, like maybe our best drive of the day. Still think
– All right, good.
I mean the Spurs win without Giannis is, I think, fundamentally a bigger win in terms of improbability. Like if you play that 10 times, I wonder if the Spurs win 8 of them. I think they do. But the Giannis thing, it was purely the moment. I mean, they were in Madison Square Garden. He had just been on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He hits a game-winning shot. He took over.
They just beat Oklahoma City.
Yes, you're right. Everything about that moment was great. It felt like that was the moment where the Bucks were going to really rise up. And then they lose two games at home to competition that they should beat. And now it's like, well, that win kind of got soured. But then they come back to, you know, San Antonio and win. So it felt workmanlike. It didn't feel like a scream out loud when the three-pointer, I think it was Ginobili who took the last shot, goes off the side of the backboard and give the Bucks the win. It didn't feel like a moment, but it's still as big a win as they've had in a couple seasons even.
So hopefully the goal will be to talk a decent amount of Bucks next week. We're going to try and get our surprise guest on and see if that person can shed some insight into this team, because like you said, they're both frustrating and amazing all in the same, like, minute.
It is definitely true.
That'll be our goal for next week.
Sounds good. What's coming up on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel this week?
What isn't coming up on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel? I did a story on Franklin's Max Alba for this week.
Oh, very good.
A three-sport star, which isn't weird, but it is weird to be, like, among the best in the state at all three sports. So talk to him about why he's so good at things, which he enjoyed.
Yeah, him and Zach Clayton of Oconomowoc have the whole football, basketball, baseball thing down to a science.
Insane. Just insane. And Max Alba's only a junior, too, so he has another year to be even better at all of them. Did a story on Wisconsin Lutheran. They have the leading scorer in Wisconsin Lutheran College, have the leading women's scorer in the conference. Actually, they have the leading scorer men as well in basketball, which was fun. And then a story on Sydney Cooks down at Kenosha St. Joe's, who is the highest recruit, and I think maybe even surpassing Arike Ogunbowale in terms of rankings, but she is quite good, so went down to find her story as well, and all those stories are on Sports Weekly this week.
Excellent. Well, like I said, you could find my column about Buck and Aikman. We have,
for sure,
it's sort of siblings week at Lake Country Lutheran, or Lake Country Lutheran at lakecountrynow.com. We've got a story about two Arrowhead twin brothers, Caleb and Ben Beversdorf, who are tearing it up, helping Arrowhead hockey be one of the best teams in the state. Story
ranked
about
number 4 in the state right now.
Which is really good for a Milwaukee area team. Like, they don't ever get up that high, so that's good. And then,
and I'm slightly biased about the Arrowhead hockey program, so it's probably best if I don't do it.
I've heard that. Oconomowoc has a pair of great sisters playing basketball. Audrey, who's a sophomore, sister Olivia, or she's maybe a junior. I'm actually confused about that, but Olivia is a freshman. So we did a story about them on the Oconomowoc site, lakecountrynow.com. Also, I keep updating my Sconnies of March section, taking a look at some of the top players from our coverage area now playing Division I college basketball. A lot of interesting stuff. I mean, stuff that I learn about days later because I just go back and take a look. It's like, wow, that guy had an amazing game. So you can check that out again, lakecountrynow.com, the place to find that.
Beautiful.
We are beautiful, JP. You especially, because you're the TV guy. So now I'm going to turn my attention to Ed Kurth, Pewaukee High School wrestling coach, mentioned at the outset of the podcast that we'd be talking a lot about issues facing high school wrestling. We've had a lot of programs dwindle in numbers, places like Franklin along the North Shore, Whitefish Bay, Menominee Falls, I think Germantown, a lot of programs that are in the 20s for varsity numbers, which is pretty low. Some of those programs have had success, and I wasn't sure if that was just the natural cycle of things or if we really are getting to a crisis point in high school wrestling. There are a lot of challenges approaches to getting kids to participate in wrestling, and Ed will talk about some of those. One of the more interesting things I thought was him talking about the role of academies and that have sort of popped up in the area, and that they mostly do great things. And it's just a new challenge where a lot of kids who are, or not even just kids, but families who are really into wrestling, high-level families and kids, they tend to do the academy approach, and that takes those potential coaches, potential kids that might recruit other kids just by nature of being good at wrestling into the youth program associated with that particular community or school, because now they're doing sort of the traveling circuit and not necessarily at the school where they're going to attend. So that's a new challenge, and Ed talks about that a little bit, and also talks about what it's like having guys like Jacob Raschka, who is the reigning state champion at 195 pounds and very much looking like a guy who will do the same again, and Blaise Beltran, who won the heavyweight championship last year. They just went to the Cheesehead Invitational Kakana this past weekend, and Blaze ended up in the championship match, which is pretty big. Raschka took third. Also, I mean, that's just one of the most prestigious tournaments in the country, so that's good for their program. They should definitely be up there when we get to the individual state tournament. When we talked, that was just before they had gone into a different tournament, the Clash, at the border with Minnesota, so he mentions that as well. That was sort of between the holidays. So give a listen to this. I think you'll find it interesting. And again, thanks for listening to Initial Reaction. Here you go.
My guest is Ed Kurth, head coach of the Pewaukee wrestling team. Has had a very successful run at Pewaukee and elsewhere, and has been a pretty big advocate for the sport of wrestling over the last several years. He knows a lot about what's going on in area wrestling. And Ed, I was just, this year in particular, it seems like I've noticed, especially not necessarily in the western part of the Milwaukee metro, but maybe in the northern part and in other parts, southern part, you're not seeing teams even coming close to filling out rosters at big time Division I programs, or filling out lineups anyway. And I didn't know if that, I know it's always a struggle to get bodies into the wrestling program and sometimes keep those athletes there. Is that something you've noticed? Is there a little bit of a crisis going on in terms of wrestling participation? Is that maybe just something, are we just in a down cycle right now and it'll pick back up? Or is this something that's been trending downward for a while that you've noticed?
Well, I'm a little worried about it. What I'm seeing is, well, I think that I personally haven't maybe done the recruiting that I needed to do in the lower. Recruiting is the ugliest part of it, because what you're trying to do is get kids to do something that is on the surface, you know, their mom probably doesn't like, they may not like, and you're trying to get these kids to join the secret club where if you're in it, then you, and you're in it long enough, you start to realize all these great benefits. I mean, but on the outside, you don't understand what it can offer you. It doesn't look like the kind of thing that maybe will teach you all these great life lessons and give this new outlook, and kind of, when you graduate from high school, you're going to have this advantage in the work world. I mean, I have plenty of kids who come out, finish their high school careers in wrestling, and they talk about how they're not nervous about things anymore. They don't have anxiety about things. I said to one kid, 2008 graduate, Praveen Bhatt, I said, you've got C's in science. Why do you think you're going to become an aeronautical engineer? He said, Coach, I wrestled for 4 years. I can do anything. And he was serious, and he became an aeronautical engineer, and he lives in Florida, and he's, you know, working for the university and so on. And I see that all the time. John Singer says, you know, He I don't know if he liked any moment of wrestling because it was so difficult, but he said it's the most important thing that he ever did. And there's a football MVP. And I think that getting people into it, once they're in, you know, and they finish the cycle, and I'm just talking about getting through high school wrestling. I'm not talking about, you know, wrestling in college and moving on to the next level. And I'm talking about getting the benefits out of wrestling that, anybody can get out of it. It doesn't matter if you're a great wrestler, if you're a conference champ, a state champ, or a JV wrestler. If you wrestle for 4 years, we have kids coming back who had average careers, great careers, all come back to wrestle in the room because they realize how special it was and what it's made them into psychologically. I mean, physically, there's no doubt. Kids who wrestle and are going to have, are, it's going to help their physiques tremendously.
Right.
But anyway, what we're talking about is getting them into this secret society of, you know, of getting all these benefits, and there's a lot of roadblocks there. I think that number one is how it looks, and of course, you know, the idea that a lot of times moms are kind of running running what their kids are going to be entering, and it's not attractive for a mom to watch a kid, you know, lose and struggle and physically get beaten, and then try to tell that mom and that kid that, you know, this is good for you, and learning how to get better after struggle is a positive thing in life. So many people now have to have immediate feedback. You either are good at it or you're not. So nobody is going to walk on the mat and go, you know, and win, and all of a sudden, you know, they're great forever. Everybody's going to struggle. Everybody's going to lose. And that's not exactly the way that the world is starting to turn here. It's about immediate feedback. It's about, okay, you're good at this, you're bad at this, so stay with the stuff you're good at. I think that's the number one thing I keep hearing all the time, you know, hey, I tried it for a day, I went to a, you know, a fifth grade practice, and I didn't like it. Why didn't you like it? Oh, I just didn't like it. But if they tell the truth, it's probably, I got put in a headlock, I couldn't get out on the bottom, you know, a kid kept beating me. There's there's not going to be any luck. You know, you can get lucky and hit a baseball, you get lucky and make a shot in basketball, but you can play tackle football and you can get lucky on a tackle. You know, I know that I've fallen in front of the running back and got credited for a tackle, you know, whether I was in middle school or high school.
Those are the only ways I got credited for a tackle, by the way. The only way that happened is if I fell in front of somebody by accident.
So, you know, I think that there's not a lot of, you know, hey, look, I got a takedown on this really good kid. That usually is not going to happen. And so I think that hurts us as far as getting kids in. You have to have a tougher attitude about taking on challenges. Parents have to want to see their kid, be willing to see their kids struggle. And I think that's becoming less and less.
Maybe it's just tradition, but the smaller communities in Wisconsin, they're able to maintain these programs. And I think it's safe to say that the best wrestling in the state is happening as far as teams go in the smaller communities. There's some pockets like obviously Kaukauna, Wisconsin Rapids that have had success. Like what are they doing? Do you think that, is it simple as that? It's tradition and they got kids wrestling at 4 years old that keeps those programs at that level, or do they have some secret that the bigger cities have trouble with?
I can take some guesses. Perhaps if wrestling is good in a certain small community, it's looked on as one of the top things our community does. Everybody takes pride in it.
Right.
Very likely, if you're talking about, you know, people staying in the community and raising their kids in the community they grew up in, then quite possibly the parents, the moms, take pride in the wrestling program as well. I mean, I see in Pewaukee, you know, if we have tough moms, we got tough wrestlers, and we got kids who know how to go after challenges. So I think that's possible. When you talk about the tradition, well, why does the tradition exist? Because people believe in what the kids are doing.
Right.
And, you know, it's not going to, it's, what is my friend doing? What is my neighbor doing? He's wrestling. Well, then, you know, you're going to wrestle. But I think it's the fact that what things can a small community do better than a big community? Quite often it's going to be something like wrestling.
Sure,
because
yeah.
It doesn't matter in wrestling. It's probably the number one sport for kids that don't have great athleticism, because it is about learning. It's about paying attention. It's very school-like, and it has to do with a little more attitude, where it's not about, you know, how big you are, what kind of genetics your parents gave you. I mean, it can obviously help. Athleticism can help, but I think from experience, my best wrestlers are not always the best athletes, and the best athletes, what happens to them is they don't like it because they're good at everything else. As soon as they try it, they try wrestling, they lose, and they're like, well, that must not be for me, and I certainly don't like the way it feels to lose. I've never done that before.
Right.
But I think a small community is, if you're talking about like a Coleman or Luxembourg Castle or Mineral Point or, you know, places like that, I think they take pride in wrestling. I think everybody's bought into it. It's hard to grow. I kind of, you know, worked on building in Pewaukee. I take a couple of steps back from maybe the lower levels. It's a hard thing to keep rolling.
Right. So one thing the big communities have now are these wrestling academies. I think Askren Wrestling Academy probably at the forefront of that. And no doubt they improve the elite talent, not for really any one school. And it's kind of nice because with the club program, they still sort of emphasize the high school competition. So you get kids in both those programs that are still wrestling for their high school team. But I'm curious what you think of those. Like, are there unseen consequences? Like, okay, now kids are even less likely to join if they're just new to this as freshmen or sophomores because they're going up against kids that have all this club experience and it's just one more hurdle they have to overcome. I mean, how do those have any impact at all on overall participation in wrestling in the bigger communities?
I guess I'm not ready to make the judgment on that yet. I do think that it has offered some challenges to our program. I mean, it's obviously given us some. It's given us Jacob Rashka, and
sure.
It obviously has given them some off-season practice facility. You can practice against kids that are the best kids from other schools as well. So there's definitely a lot of positives in it. You've got people who really know their stuff. You know, you've got people who wrestle at the collegiate level. You've got paid coaches. So I would definitely be afraid of saying it's a negative. I wouldn't say that. I would say the challenge it provides is, you're now taking, if you have a club and you have a kid and a family who are moving up and they're becoming the better wrestlers in the club, well, now you're looking for something else where you're going to get better competition. And there's an academy down the road, so you go to that. Well, the thing is, that kid's going to get better competition, possibly better, I mean, most likely, better coaching, more attention. It's like you're paying for it. You're paying to go there. The coaches are being paid. You probably have more collegiate wrestlers who are working in the program. What you've just done also is you're taking out the top most invested families out of the youth program.
Oh yeah, interesting.
And that's not going to breed participation then. Instead of that kid or that parent or that family trying to get the neighborhood kids and the classmates to go to the tournament on the weekend, now the people they're traveling to the tournament with are the kids from these other schools. You've got a Pewaukee kid going with the Arrowhead kid and the Kettle Moraine kid, and that's your group that you like going to your tournaments with. As opposed to, you know, prior to that, you're trying to get your classmates to go. Now, it still can be happening, and again, all I say is, well, that's a different kind of challenge. We've always had challenges with recruiting, but I think this has kind of caught me off guard, I think, because I do like the fact that higher level kids get higher level practice partners and higher level coaches and moves and so on. So I can't say that's going to be bad for wrestling, but I do think that we have to consider these challenges and what it's going to take to get those. Because I prefer to work, I'm very happy to have Ben Askren working with the top wrestlers in Lake Country area,
right, of course.
While I work with the average kids and try and make them above average, you know, that's great for me as far as, you know, if we're talking about middle school or elementary school or even high school. But the problem is you got to get those kids in the room, and the kid going to the academy now feels like he's got his guys, he's got his buddies, and they aren't from the community now.
Yeah, that's interesting.
For that sport, they can travel, have a good time, and it's not dragging any other kids to those tournaments. So it's up to the youth coaches, and of course it's up to me to figure out ways to get kids into the youth program and into the middle school program that haven't really seen it before or maybe have said no before. But I just don't think we can say academies are bad or negative in any way. I haven't worked through something like this. I think Askren Academy, maybe, for instance, started in 2011. The Ringer's been going for quite a while.
Right.
We have to be able I still want to get all these other kids to receive the benefits of wrestling that are maybe only going to be average wrestlers or whatever. But I really love team wrestling.
Right.
I'm particularly not about building, you know, the individual state champ as much as trying to get a shot at winning the team state championship. So, and that takes a lot of guys who are not superstars.
Right.
Now, last year we did get about 9 kids out as freshmen that never wrestled before. a few years ago, I was like, I don't think I'm ever going to have to recruit freshmen who've never wrestled before again because our middle school youth program are going so strong. But now I have to get those brand new kids. We're going to walk into the clash, and I'm going to have about four kids in the lineup who have never wrestled until last year, and they're going to wrestle in the toughest dual meet tournament in the entire country.
Right.
So that's what we have to go with. I just got to figure out a way to make sure we're still getting those kind of kids to wrestle middle school, elementary school. Another issue is some kids finally get the heart, the desire to do so when they're seniors or juniors or even after high school. They come back and they go, yeah, I should have wrestled. And they all have the courage now. And now they're trying to get to an MMA. Yeah. And they're always thinking, yeah, I wish I would have wrestled. But when they're freshmen or eighth graders, they don't have the toughness, the drive, the confidence, the maturity to do those things. And it is a hard thing to get younger kids to do it. I do think there's some communities that have that, you know, have toughness. I think there's other communities, and maybe you're talking about more affluent communities that need more toughness. It's funny that we always say when there's a blue-collar community, everybody wants to turn it white-collar. But then when it's white-collar, everybody says, well, we need a little more blue-collar attitude.
Right. That's funny. You're right. Here's a random one, and I've heard a couple coaches say that one of the big drawbacks to trying to get kids in the program is the uniform itself, because it's very tight-fitting, and it's not flattering to everybody, and that might be one of the things you're talking about where families struggle with that a little bit. I mean, is that overblown? Is that true? And if that is a problem, has there been thought to changing the uniform, making it a little more loose-fitting? I don't really know well if that would be a huge detriment or not to the actual competition itself. I mean, how has that been discussed whatsoever?
Well, I think about the uniform, I think it does keep kids away. I've had plenty of kids who have said, I would do it except for the uniform. Now, a lot of that's an excuse. Kids are always looking for an excuse, you know. Whether they don't like the way it looks, if they call it two guys crawling around, you know, I say, you know, you're on your feet, you're trying to throw the other guy to the ground. They're trying to find reasons not to do it. The Saturdays, they talk about the dieting when hardly anybody is dieting much, you know, at least around here. It's all about getting bigger and stronger. You look at where is Pewaukee's top kids? They're all in the upper weights and they're not dieting. Bird, Rashka, Beltran, Squenner, you know, they're on the upper weights. They are not dieting. They all want to gain another 10, 15 pounds. So there's a lot of excuses. And the uniform maybe is one of the most believable ones. I don't understand, if you're talking about tradition, why, if we know that times are changing and immediate feedback gratification is important, we know that, you know, kids are on computers trying to get them off the computer and do active things like this, why we can't make a change with it. Now, middle school programs, at least in our conference, I think through the WIA, have already said you can go to the T-shirt and shorts, the Under Armour kind of shirt, and that's big progress. So you've just eliminated one major excuse. High school, though, is still working through it, and every year now we're presenting it and saying we'd like to go to the T-shirt and shorts option, and they're saying, well, bring it up next year. Whether it's the WI or the National Wrestling Association, I do think it's a drawback. I've always thought it was. I can remember back into the early 90s when kids didn't want to come out before because of the singlet, and I'd be able to tell them, you don't have to wear the singlet, and we'd go to tournaments and they'd wear t-shirts and shorts, and that was fine. Eventually they try a singlet on, they realize it doesn't look so bad, and, sure. But it's a significant, drawback, I guess, especially if you don't, you know, think that, you know, your physique is very good or whatever. And I mean, loose fitting clothes are usually the thing that people like to wear. So,
right. All right. Then as we wrap up, you know, you talked about the team wrestling aspect, but you do have two defending state champions. You've talked about Rashka a little bit and Blaze Beltran, two guys that at this point are number one in the state. And especially with Rashka, it's going to take a pretty impressive upset performance to keep him from winning another state title. I mean, he's just at such an elite level. How do those guys stay motivated? How do you keep them motivated knowing that you've got 12 other guys that you got to try to bring up to speed and work with them? And you've got these two who are already at such a high level and they know they're going to win the vast majority of their matches. I mean, what sorts of things do they do to try to stay as engaged as possible and keep that competitive fire going?
Well, I think you just hit the number two most troubling question I have. Number one is the recruiting. In youth, middle school, and high school, And number two is this dilemma I have with the wrestlers who are learning how to become above average or even average. And then we've got guys like Rashford and Blaze. Well, and I think this is definitely a new challenge that I've had. Have not had returning state champ, even one in my room ever before. And I do get sucked in by trying to, am I doing what's good for those guys? Last year, before they won their state titles, I'm like, I don't want to run practices or do things that are going to prevent them from winning state titles. And they won them, thank God. And so they got what they deserved and what they earned. But at the same time, at the end of the season, I'm still trying to figure out how we have 7 conference champions, but we tied for the conference tournament title. We did win the dual meet title. The weird thing about dual meets in wrestling, I mean, some people can say it's the ultimate team sport because you can't feed the ball to your number one guy and have him score 40 points or, right, you know, 4 touchdowns or something. Best guy can only score 6. Your worst guy can only lose 6. You know, we still maintain that the team aspect. We still win the dual meet title. We still went undefeated in dual meets. But then when we went to the tournament, we saw the split, I guess, between, you know, I don't know if it's haves and have-nots, but we saw the difference between the guys who are exceptional and the other guys where I'm going, maybe I didn't do everything I could for these guys. I mean, I work with them most of the time. I'm not... and more so this year now is I'm making myself ensure that I'm going back to how it was when everybody was average. Everybody was struggling just to get to state. Everybody was struggling just to be a conference champ. It was a lot easier at that time because what you were showing everybody needed. Now, you know, I know that Jacob Rashke does not need to do what I'm showing right now in order to win a match.
Right.
Although I will say that I still believe that when I was coaching Jacob in the youth program, the fundamentals and the things I was showing, I still see in his wrestling today. And, I mean, as far as his head position, he stays outside, he doesn't get caught underneath. His fundamentals, even how he ties up, are all things that we worked on when he was younger. And now I have to ensure that even for these kids who are still in his freshmen, that they're getting, you know, the same kind of fundamental lessons. And I'll tell you another thing I get suckered in by is just watching those two wrestle. I mean, I watch them wrestle each other, and never in my coaching career have I had the privilege of watching two of my wrestlers compete like that in my wrestling room. I really want to soak this up and really appreciate fully what it's like to have that kind of level of wrestling where I'm watching two guys just practicing, you know, they're going live in my practice room and the movements they're making and how hard they're going against each other, I'll most likely, you know, never have this again. I will say this too. It's also very hard to have your best kids be the kids who can kick the crap out of you. It's a lot easier if your 106 pounder is your superstar because I can still manhandle or still control a 106 pounder, even if he's a state champ. But when you're talking about two guys who are my size, you know, everybody may be looking, you know, I may be telling everybody to do something, but they're looking over at the guy who can kick my butt, and they're going, well, what do you think about this, Jacob Rashka, Blaze Beltran? And if you don't have those guys on board, and really, if they want to make a power play, they can walk around the school, and they could, you know, talk about, you know, the coach doesn't know what he's doing and stuff, yeah. And if you talk about peer pressure, you know, they really have an angle there where you're kind of, you got to make sure that you're also instilling the correct attributes that don't have anything to do with wrestling, making sure that you've got good people there. And luckily we do. I mean, Blaze and Rashka are two of the best. And they're making the other kids they wrestle with better. I mean, Sklenner and Brandon Berg, I mean, those guys are high level too.
Right.
But it's a little bit of a dilemma. The size of the greatest, of the best kids in the room, greatest wrestlers we've ever had, perhaps. I wrestled with guys like McIntosh and Josh Moore, and mm-hmm. Josh wrestled 4 years in the Air Force and so on. But Rashka's by far the best wrestler we've had. You know, Blaze competes with him. So just to finish, is a continuing challenge. I think I'm accepting and a little understanding the challenge a little bit more this year. I didn't realize how I probably was gravitating over there. And right now it's kind of like, okay, I'm going to show everybody this. And Roshka and Blaze, I've been able to trust that you guys are working hard and doing the things you need to do to become better. I'm going to have to, you know, focus on some of these other guys who are still in their second year of wrestling right now. So it's, I think I've adjusted a little bit better this year to that.
Yeah. All right, Ed, I really appreciate it. Good luck at the Clash. Good luck the rest of the season, and thanks for your insight.